you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Back like boomerangs and spinal cord. Sixers Talk brought to you by Wilmington University. WomU Works. Danny Pommels, our esteemed co-host, producer, Ben Berry. We call him Slash, joining me as always. And Ben, curious time here for the 76ers, as it's got to be a situation of pick your poison. What do you want to deal with first, the front office, the roster, or the coaching staff? We outlined that pretty well on the last podcast, but after we recorded, dun, dun, dun. Billy Donovan was decided to mutually part ways with the Oklahoma City Thunder. So he is not only a coaching candidate now for the 76ers with a nice pedigree, which we'll get into, but that also kind of negates the whole Al Horford, the OKC thing for Chris Paul. Am I wrong about that? Or do you feel like that's still in play? Because to me, that why would OKC and Sam Presti value that as much if he's not working with a coach that he's worked with in the past, who he's had incredible success with, albeit on the college level?
So here's why I think it could still happen. Not favorable, definitely not in our favor. Why I believe it still can happen, though. It seems like Billy Donovan isn't an OKC anymore, because OKC did better this year than projected, and they want to go all in on a rebuild. And Billy Donovan is like, nah, I'm not here to lose. Chris Paul, he's not playing to lose. Like, we know his competitive streak. So they probably want to flip Paul, get some more assets, draft picks, young players. Maybe OKC, no, they can flip Horford for some other pieces that the Sixers can't. So maybe that's still a possibility if they get Horford and Matisse, or Horford and Shake. Horford in a draft pick, we get Chris Paul back, then they can flip Al Horford to somewhere else, Sacramento or another team. I think it's still a play. It's not a huge in our favor, but I think it's still a possibility.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. And then, you know, Al Horford is 34, so he brings – a little more, it's weird to say this, but a little more youth to the table than Chris Paul. So that might be – they are getting younger in that trade. And they also have, like, the case of Steven Adams, who is a guy that they can, like, you know, part ways with if they really wanted to, and have Al Horford take his spot. So I see that, and maybe a young piece would entice, you know, Sam Presti to make that type of move. But – As it stands right now, I would hope, you know, especially with what we outlined on the last podcast with, you know, Tobias Harris and Al Horford both being moved, I would hope that at the very least they can find a suitor for Al Horford and get something in return that creates more value here for the 76ers. Because where are they even a six seed next season? Like, would they even be a six seed next season as currently constructed? Like, I don't even know if they would be that good.
Miami, Boston, Toronto, Milwaukee's up in the air in case they feel like
Indiana.
They're forced to trade Giannis. Indiana, Brooklyn.
Come on, man. There you go. That's six teams right there.
That's six teams. Five of those teams have a head coach.
Right. Dig it.
They have young players. It does not look promising. They got to do something. You said it before. So many moving parts. Do they focus on the front office? Do they focus on the roster? Do they focus on a head coaching search? And they can only do two of the three of those things. They got to do all three, and they got to. I know it's not a lot of time, and this is an unusual offseason. They got to do it fast. And moving Al Horford's contract seems like an impossible thing right now, but they got to do it. you got to be able to pull that off. Someone,
yeah.
I don't care what you have to give up, but you got to move it.
They found a suitor for Markelle Fultz, which I thought would not happen. So I would assume Al Horford can be moved because it wasn't even like he was hurt or looked awful. When in spurts, it was more or less the fit, you know, of how he looked with Joel Embiid. And I feel like, you know, you bring up the thing about, you know, the teams are ahead of them and whatnot. Like, I'm struggling with the fact that what happened? You know what I mean? Like, Keith Pompey has this article out really saying analytics was the thing that spelled the demise for the 76ers. Yeah, Brett Brown had late game executing issues and rotation issues, but all that wasn't his fault because there were names in the front office, Rucker, Cohen, Olivo, who are there making decisions and affecting just, you know, what players the team gets that they think might fit and how those players are instituted into rotation because of analytics and things like that. So it's like a deep breath sigh moment because you're looking at Elton Brand and his saying things he's saying about getting more basketball minds into the front office. And then you have these people who are relying on analytics, although with great success in the past, you know, coming over from the Toronto Raptors organization was Ned Cohen and whatnot. So I think more or less my point is that Keith is pointing to analytics and saying the front office will probably be where you see more upheaval before they even hire a head coach. I think that is smart. Front office head coach roster, but you want to say you want, and I see you champing at the bit.
So analytics, it's a vague term. You know what it means. I know what it means. Yeah, our listeners don't.
That's a good point you're making. Yeah, it is a vague term. Just,
he's an analytics guy. She's an analytics woman. The analytics don't work, blah, blah, blah. Analytics is numbers and data that you can rely on for different situations. It seems like Alex Rucker, the report is he's unlikely to return next season. Don't know. Even if he's out and he's a Colangelo guy, great. It wasn't analytics that put this team together. It wasn't analytics that has a starting five of two centers and two power forwards. I see you just threw your hand up, but like,
It might have been analytics. I mean, you go all the way back to Sam Hinkie. Well, let's just go back to Sam Hinkie. The players that they decided to center the roster around, the franchise around, Joel and Ben. I think Ben was more of a no-brainer. Joel was definitely like high upside. You know, we're going to hedge the numbers and the expectations against the injury type of thing. So that, to a degree, is analytics. And your point is very valid because what degree of analytics person are you? What measures do you actually use as opposed to some you don't believe in? So, like,
I think that's a great point. Ben was like a no-brainer, fell into their lap. You have to take him. If Sam Hinkie was still here when they selected Ben and he's still here with the team moving forward, I don't know the man. I never met him. When he had here or now that he's bald. No way you're convincing me he's signing a center to play power forward and a power forward to play small forward. So you have a big dominant lineup, the bully ball in a league that you can't bully ball anymore unless everyone on there is running a 4-2-40 and just ridiculously athletic and agile. So the blame analytics, it just seems like a little bit of a cop-out. Needing more basketball minds, that's something you say to make people feel good about things. But
that's coming from the GM. That was right out the GM's mouth.
I don't believe it. You know my crazy analogies and comparisons.
No, I was in college. I'm here for it.
You in college, you come home, you know you're not doing well in the class. And someone says, parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, how college going? How you doing in psychology, how you doing in biology? Well, you know, it's going. It's a little hard, but I'm working hard at it. But are you doing well? Like, that was never answered. For them just saying, oh, we're bringing in more basketball minds. Everyone in there should be a basketball mind. Some people might be better with analytics. Everyone in there should know a bad team when they see it. That's inexcusable.
Also, I think the thing, you know, you talk about bringing in basketball minds. I think the thing that we need to really keep an eye on, which the article pointed out well, which you know, Elton plays a role in as well is the structure of how that whole thing, like, you know, you have the assistant GM and Ned Cohen, you have like a VP of strategy, you have the general manager, you have the owner, but there's like no team president. Does the team president have autonomy to make decisions aside from Elton? You know, is Elton above the team president? Are they making joint decisions? Are they the same? Are they on the same par with each other? Do you move Elton to president and bring in the GM, or how, you know what I'm saying? Like the structure and who's making the decision. So I think that's what analytically, when you look at the Sixers structure, if Elton is a player who was in the league for numerous seasons, a number one draft pick, you know, long in the tooth in this basketball thing from Duke to, you know, the NBA, the whole bit. And then you have guys who, you know, played basketball in college, but, you know, have a master's degree in X thing that kind of helps them break down the number. You know what I'm saying? Like the, when he says basketball minds, that's what I think of. Like you're bringing in Jason Kidd, Ty Lue, you know, Steve Nash, somebody like that who like just has like an acumen that you can apply to the eye test on certain guys, things you've noticed about other players that you've interacted with that remind you of this. You know what I'm saying? Like it just elevates the whole, like the thinking. If everybody's having a contribution as well as this front office has been designed, if there aren't basketball minds contributing as much to as there are analytical minds, I can see why he said it that way.
I want to know who was the basketball mind last year that spoke up when they said, we're bringing in Al, we're going to re-sign Tobias.
Well,
we're not going to have any shot creators.
Al was Elton's boy. So Elton and him played in the Hawks together. So I know for a fact that Elton endorsed that.
Okay.
Now, I would see the Tobias Harris signing being more of an analytical approach because numbers-wise, he projects that way as like a 50-40-90 guy and like, you know, time spent on the court versus, you know, his PER and like things like that. So I could see Tobias being a guy where they're thinking like culture-wise and analytical-wise, he gives us the numbers that are appealing and he also culture-wise fits in.
Great for the culture. My analytics says he was a good player on a bad team.
What do your analytics say, bro?
He's a good player on a bad team. And if that's all you are, that's fine. I was never
Detroit,
a good player
Orlando.
On a bad team.
Although the Clippers were good when he came over. Clippers were doing well when he came over.
Yeah, they were above 500, but, like, he was never the guy. He was never going to be the guy to get a max contract. I don't think anybody else in the league was giving up what the Sixers gave up to trade for him. So you got that. You got the shooting. Where was the basketball minds on that? Like the team's lack of shooting.
Elton, well, they let JJ go. That was a bona fide shooter right there.
Elton's the GM. And if he doesn't want my theory of anger coming on him, my theory of anger that he doesn't know exists or will never know that exists, I just want to know, like, he got to come out here and say, all right, this was my decision. This wasn't. And the people that made those decisions, if they're going to stay on the team in the front office, they need to answer for it. They need to be on the hot seat as well.
I mean, like you said, we're going to see who stays and goes. That's going to, and on how people are repositioned, that is going to be clearly indicative. But if your assistant GM is making, you know, a lot of these decisions, you know, somebody's head has to roll because then there's no accountability otherwise. So it's just, you know, like the team underperforms, you fire the coach, you can't fire the players. So you just bring in Elton, you fire Elton. That makes you look like a colossally disorganized, inept organization. You know, you fire your GM who you just bought in and considered a wonderkin.
I think for most of the league and people in other cities, the Sixers front office organization is kind of a laughingstock of disaster. The Sixers aren't the Knicks, but things got bad real quickly, and it's like, oh, they did a lot of losing just to be a middle of the road team.
My guy, we were a laughingstock once that collar flapped out of here a couple of years ago, because Brian Colangelo and the burner gate and all that complete laughing stock, let alone the Markelle Fultz situation and how that was handled.
All right, so Sixers are more.
We're way beyond that. At this point, it's looking like you know, people are screaming for them to sell the team and things like that. That's kind of where we are now in my eyes.
Yeah, and so this little off topic, but still on topic. Some people say the process is a failure. Other people said the process ended when Sam Hinkie was forced out. Mm-hmm. I think depending where you are, for a lot of people here in the city, the process ended when Sam Hinkie time here ended. I think that's how you feel. You feel that's how Amy.
I don't feel that way. I feel like the process, as long as Ben and Joel are competing for championships, the process is continuing. If you lose one of those two, because they were the bounty. That was what you gained from doing that. So
that's how I feel, and I believe that's how people feel on a national scope. Like that's how people in Minnesota and Golden State and the Bay Area, how they feel down in Texas, Louisiana. They feel long as Joel's on the team, this is the process. So if they win a championship, the call will be process has been completed or whatever. Does it end up traded or whatever, the process failed.
But that's the thing. It's so far from a championship at this point. This is unbelievable, considering they were four bounces from the Eastern Conference Final last year.
Well, I guess we're going fast to a process failed.
Well, I don't look at it that way. I just look at it like the Jimmy Butler thing is just a constant, like, like that is the fly in the ointment that is like causing all of this thing to be, because you leverage so much to get him here and Tobias, and then it didn't work out, and now we're left with like trying to creep back out of the cellar of the Eastern those top eight seeds. Like if you're a 7-8 seed, like you know. That's not remarkable in any way, shape, or form. And we've been there. They were there with Iguodala and whatnot. And that's why they wanted to, you know, make these trades, because they were continually, perpetually in that 7th, 8th, 9th seed. So everyone else has gotten better. Everyone else has made more, you know, stronger moves in the conference. You know, we outlined 6 teams that we feel like have a brighter future than the 76ers at this point. So if they don't have a lot of time, like you mentioned, but they also have to take some risks at the same time to make it all work. So is Billy Donovan for you, which we'll get into after this quick message, is Billy Donovan for you the guy to take a risk with? Hey, dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. There's a local university that's ready to bring your dreams into reach. It's Wilmington University. WilmU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates to reach new heights in your field. WilmU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu. Thank you to our sponsors. We appreciate them. As always, Sixers Talk banging you upside the head with the Billy Donovan discussion. Here he is on the market, 60% NBA win clip. He's parted ways mutually with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like you mentioned earlier, Ben, he's not here for the rebuild. And that's not what the Sixers have in any way, shape, or form. But they need to make some proper steps. I, for one, am in on Billy Donovan because I want to hire a coach who has been around the block, who has experienced the highs and lows of the playoffs, not the NBA season, but the playoffs. So Billy Donovan checks a lot of boxes for me. I look at him dealing with superstars, dramatic superstars like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, dramatic in the fact that Durant eventually left for the Golden State Warriors, and he had to deal with all of the backlash from that, as well as, you know, trying to manage those personalities. Russell Westbrook, that whole thing, still managed to coach the team to the playoffs prior to him leaving. I mean, after he left. So I say all that to say, I'm looking at his pedigree, his resume, and I'm like, kind of fits the Sixers situation.
Billy Donovan looks great on paper.
Ooh, I feel something coming.
Feel like a shot.
A draft.
Great on paper.
I felt a draft.
And this isn't a shot at him. Ty Lue would look great on paper. Jason Kidd, like, people will be a fan of him. I think those are the safe hires. Ooh. And as we talked about last segment, you got to take a chance. You got to take a chance to improve this roster, the front office, and this head coaching situation.
But see, I don't look, not to interrupt you, but I feel like Donovan offers you an opportunity to have like more of a sure thing. Like you can take risks in other spaces, maybe the roster or the front office. He's given all of a sudden this type of candidate being on the market gives you an opportunity to take less risk at the head coaching position because, like I mentioned, he's been around the block. He's been in the conference finals. He's lost in dramatic ways. He's won in dramatic ways. So I feel like he has something. He probably has a little chip on his shoulder because of maybe the way things went. OKC brings that here to the Sixers. You can't argue with the national championships and the college ranks. You can't argue with the coaching success. So he will garner Ben and Joel's respect and attention. That's how I look at it.
Can't argue with his success. Back-to-back national championship games. He's done well with this Thunder team that was young and no one thought that would compete. He kept them in the playoffs when they had Brody, Russell Westbrook. The reason I'm saying it is a safe pick. Who are the three coaches left right now in the Eastern Conference? Nick Nurse, Brad Stevens, Eric Spoelstra. What do they have in common? As you think about it, Danny, as the listeners think about it, on the surface, doesn't seem like much. Eric Spoelstra was coaching some small rinky-dink division team out in Germany, if I remember correctly. Pat Riley brought him in to be the video guy for a long time. Brad Stevens went to back-to-back national championship appearances. Again, two of the most boring games I've ever watched in my life. But, you know, those games are awful.
You're a funny
against
bro.
Duke and UConn.
Yeah.
I never even thought about it. I wonder what's the dynamic between him and Kemba, since, you know, Kemba kept him from getting the national championship.
Right.
But
right.
He was succeeded at the young at the college level. Billy Donovan had got the championships though. And then you have Nick Nurse, which is a little bit of an exception, was an assistant for a handful of years in Toronto. Danny Ainge in Boston met up with Brad Stevens. It spent days, not weeks, getting to know him when he was trying to pursue him to come to Boston and practically gave him the keys to the castle. Spoelstra was under Riley for over a decade just learning. So he's the head coach, got Pat Riley's full support. Nick Nurse is Toronto's guy. He came up there. All those GMs and presidents of basketball operations, they know these head coaches. They spent time trying to get to know them. And it wasn't, man, the season's starting soon. We don't know what's going to happen. We got to find somebody quick. It was an intimate, an intimate relationship of getting to know this guy.
Were you talking to yourself when you said that?
Yeah, a little bit, because if I was listening, I would have started laughing. Giving these guys the opportunity just to do their thing and trusting them with, no pun intended, the process of turning these teams into title contenders. Bring Billy Donovan here. It's a safe hire, but it's also he's going to turn this around quickly. We're going to be back to a championship contender in the next 2 to 3 years. Same way with Tyronn Lue, same way with Jason Kidd. I'm not saying those guys are bad hires by any means. I just think they're the safest. I think to get back up to the Eastern Conference, be an Eastern Conference finals contender, to make it to the finals, I think you got to take a risky move and get someone here that comes in, you give the keys to the castle, and let them do their thing.
You make a good point, man. I can't front on that because I see the analogy and the inference you're drawing between – how those coaches so based on what you're saying, Ime Udoka would be a great candidate because the Sixers have known him. He came over in a year where I can't really describe this year in any other way but like
a disaster.
Underperforming disaster. I don't know, man. I don't want to be too heavy-handed, but here we are just talking about what could have happened. So yeah, that would be a disaster.
It's the Batman versus Superman of NBA seasons. That's what it was.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Wonder Woman was cold in that movie though, but I feel like if the Sixers, you make the point of them like getting to know a candidate and having, you know, this nurturing period of like trying to develop a relationship, but like you mentioned, it being really short off season as well. So do they even have time to do something like that to anybody other than like Ime?
I would say they had time. I don't think anyone thought Brett was coming back in May, right? Back in March or April before the season like was suspended.
I can
at
see
this
that
point. They don't have much time, but I don't – if I'm Elton's boss or the people that's making decisions, let's put everyone in the front office. If I'm their boss and I ask what happened or why did you hire Lou? Why did you hire Donovan? And if your response is we didn't have enough time to actually intimately get to know this guy out and – Indiana or Kansas or whatever, that answer, that response is not going to suffice.
Do you have a guy you want then? Who's the person that's the top of your list?
The guy that's at the top of my list. There's no way it'll happen.
Not Jay Wright. Please don't say Jay Wright.
No, I'm not going to say Jay Wright. I'm not going to say Jay Wright. I think this is more far-fetched than Jay Wright, though.
All right, go.
Coach K.
What is going on? He's not even in the list of candidates. Who of the candidates are you interested in?
I mean, Steve Nash wasn't the candidate for the next job.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I was watching an interview with him on NBA or Inside the NBA last night, and he was just talking about how, you know, he reached out to the Brooklyn Nets to ask about the job. Like, he put his name in the hat. They didn't reach out.
Word?
That's what he said. That's what he said.
Let me call the Sixers up right now. Then.
Right.
Out of the candidates, I think you keep it in-house at this point.
Because of the short offseason, you just push your email forward and then go on from there.
Short offseason, from what I hear, he's a good assistant coach. Like, the team believes in him.
Sought after for the Bulls job.
I hate saying that after I've kind of napalmed the front office earlier in this pod with some of their other decisions. But it's a short off season. These players already know him. I would like to think they respect him. And he's been here, so I think that's your best bet. Lou, Kidd, Donovan, those are the big splashy names.
Regardless of who they hire, how they change the roster, how the front office switches around or is reconfigured or what have you, the Sixers' managing partners continue to get richer. Josh Harris has improved and gone up the Forbes 400 wealthiest Americans list from $4.4 billion last year in 2019 to $5.1 billion. His net worth has risen to. And Michael Rubin, not a managing partner, just a partner, his net worth is up to $3.5 billion from $2.9 billion. So whatever's happening, this investment continues to pay dividends without a new stadium, without any of the things that these people have, you know, come after for, you know, people taking pay cuts or furloughs or what have you. Regardless of all that, they continue to get wealthier. So that should make people feel better, right, Ben?
Yeah.
This has been Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilmu Works. We thank you for always tuning in and catching up with us. More to come as the off season continues. I'm Danny Pommels for Ben Berry, a.k.a. Slash. We will see you next time.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.